Hi, this is Patti LuPone.
This is Allison Janney.
This is Matt Ballmer.
This is Donna Murphy.
This is Nia Vardalos.
This is Jesse Tyler Ferguson.
This is Beanie Feldstein.
I'm Octavia Spencer.
This is Ben Platt, and you're listening to Little Known Facts with my favorite person on the planet, Alana Levine.
A-OK.
Welcome to Little Known Facts, a podcast where you will hear unfiltered, raw, honest, and uniquely funny interviews with artists you love as they talk about the art they love to make. I'm your host, Alana Levine.
You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Hey, I heard you needed inspiration. He's a lot of end friends with some revelations. Little known back to the day. Every little thing's gonna be A-okay.
Little known fact about my guest today, when she was filming My Cousin Vinny, I was subletting her apartment in LA while she was on location. My roommate at the time was Tony Award winner John Benjamin Hickey, and to be flooded with memories talking to Marissa about that time, about her Oscar win, and then just talking about so many incredible things that she has done. Plays and TV shows and movies and just a life of artistry and creativity and integrity. I have loved her from the first. I remember meeting her all those years ago. I remain a fan. I'm so proud of her and feel lucky to call her friend. Welcome Marissa Tomei to the podcast.
A-OK.
Hi, Marissa Tomei, Academy Award-winning friend of mine and extraordinarily talented artist. Thanks for being on the podcast today.
I'm so happy to be speaking with you, my friend.
Me too. It's been so long since I've had a chance to really talk to you about some of the incredible work that I've watched of yours this last year. But most recently, I had the privilege last night of watching The King of Staten Island, and I loved it so much, and I'm just really moved deeply by this movie, and I thought that your performance as Margie, as Pete's mom, was so nuanced and deep and funny and sort of everything you do so well, and so I would love to talk a little bit about the movie, if that's okay with you.
Yes, thanks for watching it. I haven't seen it yet myself, actually. So this will be fun for me.
Wow. So did you have to do any ADR? Have you seen little bits of it?
Yes, I did a little bit of ADR. I did see some little bits. And in general, I find it excruciating to watch anything that I've done. So, but this one I want to, because I want to for Pete and I want to for Judd. And I'm really proud of what they both did. Judd was going into different territory. It's a really funny movie, but even when we were shooting it, I was like, oh, this tone, he's going for a different kind of tone that he's gone for before. But also, tone is everything in a film, and he was really trying to find that sweet spot, which I can tell that he did. So I guess I feel that's what I mean. Like, you know, who am I to be like, I'm proud of Judd Apatow, but I'm proud of his stretching and finding like another layer of where he is now in his life, how he wants to express himself. You know, tone is vibration too. So I guess he's in a different vibration of his life. And then Pete, because he's taking such a giant risk, exposing himself and also stepping into actor shoes. So I think I will make myself watch it at some point.
Well, I have to say, I think everything you're describing, the reasons you feel particularly proud of these artists, really did shine through. I mean, it's kind of it's a very intimate, small movie covering just huge themes. And maybe you could talk a little bit about how you were introduced to the project. And when you talk about tone, what Judd said he wanted to do when you guys met. And so how did this movie come to you? And tell me that story.
You know, it was, I had known Judd a little bit. I did a cameo in Trainwreck via Amy Schumer, who invited me along for that day. And it was so fun. And I just think Amy is just off the charts, incredible. And I did this one day on that. And so he knew me a little bit. And then really with this one, I don't really, really know how it happened. I think the traditional way, like my agent pitched me or my manager, and probably I know that Pete told me later that he wanted me to play this part. I think his actual mom probably had a hand in who she wanted or would approve. But I wound up speaking with Judd, and he laid out how there was going to be a lot of improvisation and how did I feel about that. And he knew that I had done that before. And I mean, I actually had done it a lot without me really realizing it, because when I was being trained, we did improv, but we didn't do a lot of improv. Like you didn't go to Upright Citizens Brigade for a year and get your chops in improv and stuff. It just wasn't part of the toolkit. So I had never really thought of it as kind of a separate thing. But even in My Cousin Vinny, that you blend line, it was just an improv. It was things we made up there on the set. But he asked me about Cyrus, because the Duplass brothers are really, that's their meat and potatoes is improv. So he knew that I had done it, but I had kind of felt like a flop in that film. So I didn't really want to talk about it that much, because there was like Jonah Hill, one of like the quickest minds in America, and John C. Reilly, who is adept at everything he does. So, and also there's a sense of, you know, that's improv is interesting because, and I'll get back to Judd in a minute, but you know, what is the role you're playing? Like my role in Cyrus, and even my role in this, really, it's not, the focus is not on my character's inner life or the parameters of what I can improv about.
Right.
Are going to be narrow. I have, you know, in any case, yes, you have to move along a certain plot or a certain, you know, objective in the scene, and the director's got to have his eye on that, and his or her. And in this case, Judd, you know, that's what I was very relaxed, because I knew he knew what he needed in each scene, or at least he knew which alternates he needed, and that could pick from later. He could pick from later, but I guess I felt a little, I didn't feel as free, because I was like, well, I'm this mom, and even though she's in it, I'm talking about in Cyrus to a degree, you know, even though she's integral to this relationship and they really are in this symbiotic codependent thing, the focus is on the male characters and it's not really about their relationship. So I was a little shy and yeah. I thought, I don't know what we talked a bunch about it. He said that it was going to be a lot of improv, that he didn't really talk about the tone at the time, or maybe he did and I just somehow didn't quite grasp it. And but he talked about Pete and how Pete would be exposing his that it would be semi-autobiographical. He'd be exposing some of his personal life, and that he was also a vulnerable, fragile person. And so, you know, on the one hand saying, hey, do you want to come play? And on the other, we're going to have to be the grownups. I remember he said that because I was like, I don't want to be the grownup. I was like, I don't, that's not why I'm an actor.
Exactly.
Yeah. But eventually I knew what he meant, and it wasn't the case. It really was just, we just all had a very playful time, and I wound up feeling so liberated. And the way that Judd works is a way that I never want to change. I want to do it that way all the time. It's not just like, oh, improv in like an amorphous way. He knows what he's looking for, but also that's the way he sets the context of the set and how safe you feel. The camera's just, it's just running, and he's not. So you're in a conversation and then you're suddenly in the scene and then you're just continuing the scene and you're going, oh, is that, do you want it like that? Or wait, I messed that up. Let me just, and yes, you do that on regular sets in filming, but you're always having to cut and there's a lot of tension. So it's, right. He doesn't even, it's always kind of freaked me out that we open ourselves up on every level as actors, and you're just this, you know, insides out on your sleeve, and then someone screams, action! And then
you know,
scream it down the street, action, action, action! And then it's like, okay, now we're going to battle. No, I'm trying to like open up every pore. So yes. Do that. He doesn't do that. So that's like just like one example of how the atmosphere was so freeing.
Did you guys do a read through of the script as a company before you started shooting?
We did rehearsals that were writer based. It was really interesting. Very, I guess it's in a Mike Lee kind of vein. We'd get together first out here in LA and then in New York before we started shooting. And we'd this was like at least a month out. Like we'd go over to Judd's studio and he'd give us the scene as what it was written as. And then we'd do it. But then he'd say, how would you really feel in that moment? Like, just start talking, just start riffing, start improvising in the rehearsal process. And then he's got cameras and recording it. And he's got co-writers there who are listening for the goods and pulling it out. And then they go back and recraft the scenes.
Wow.
So that was a long process. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And was Pete and Bill Burr and Maud Apatow, was the entire company there, or was that just you and Pete, or you and Bill separately?
It was separate to whomever you were having a scene with.
Okay.
So it wasn't all together, but you know, there was, as we got, now you're reminding me, closer to start date, when we got to New York for those rehearsals, we went into like a big, circle with everybody and all the firemen too. And so you'd be in the same room and be, even if other people were quote unquote, like on stage doing their scene, you were still in the room. And that was nerve-wracking. It was scary. But it also-
To not feel performative, like because other people were watching before it was cooked, like what was nerve-wracking?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Because it not only wasn't cooked, it was wildly erratic in terms of what, you know, what might stick.
And
And also the, yes, exactly. Like I was certainly just starting to sniff around to, well, who is Margie? Because I hadn't spoken to his mom yet at that point, maybe once. I didn't base it on Amy, but I did want to connect with her. And Judd was really, really, really wanted me to. And I'm really glad I did, because I could not figure out how, I just didn't understand how someone was so patient. I could not.
What do you mean? Wait, what do you mean by that?
I mean, well, my character.
Yes.
Is extremely patient.
Yes.
To me, it seemed like she was taking a lot of crap. And
yeah.
And I just, it wasn't a pleasant place to be, actually, in a lot of, when we were filming it too, like in the scenes. The set was one of the most fun I've ever been on. But in the emotional component was kind of, it wasn't a place for it was hard for me to live in that place, but not hard for Amy. That's not how she sees it. And that was really helpful to me. And like, as you know, one of the great things we get to do as actors is walk in someone else's shoes and kind of spiritually understand the world in a different way. And just being around and talking to someone who has so much faith in her son, understands his limitations, but also sees where he could be heading in the best way, understands the trauma, and just has endless, endless patience for him. Even to everyone questions it. Everyone, and even in the movie, right? The Bill Burr's character questions it. Everyone in her life was questioning it. I was questioning it. And well, we can say that she was right, because Pete is growing up and has so much to offer, and she always saw that. You know, she always had faith in his healing.
What was your experience like with Pete?
That was just, I felt kind of like, I felt in his family pretty quickly. Like, kind of, he has a little bit of a vibe like my brother when my brother was a little younger. It's like I could, lanky and dark eyes, and I felt more brotherly and sisterly than maternal.
Mother son.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's really funny, and he's really honest. So I like being in that space with anyone who just, you know, calls it like they see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it is different, you know, working with stand-ups versus, or well, let me not assume that. Did it feel different working with people who, were more in the comedy world? Bill Burr also, than other scene partners that you've had? Did you have to adapt to that? And is that what Judd meant when he said, we're the grown-ups? Did he mean in terms of the kind of work you've been doing and how you approach the work?
No, he meant we just have to, you know, be sensitive and keep an eye on Pete, the real Pete, not the character.
Okay. And right, like the fragility of that.
Yes.
I mean, it was such a family affair. You talk about Pete, you talk about his mom, Amy. I haven't even described for our listeners, but basically it is an adaptation or a fictionalized version of facts that we know about the person Pete Davidson in the world, which is his father was a firefighter and he was part of the tragedy of 9/11. The story in this movie does not follow that exact same trajectory, but the general story is of a son grappling with that kind of trauma in his life. And so I just wanted to quickly put out for those who haven't seen the movie yet, it is loosely based and beautifully drawn on Pete Davidson and his family's real story. And in the movie, Maude Apatow, who is Judd Apatow's real life daughter, plays your daughter and Pete's sister, which just seems really dreamy, like to get to literally work with your daughter or father. And I wonder, was that a joyous thing to behold?
Absolutely, it was. And they, I also ran into them on a few occasions outside at the theater, you know, outside of work, and just saw, they were just together all the time, just thoroughly enjoying each other. And we went to see, what was that? That Natasha Lyonne produced a play that was so good. Anyway, it was extremely, I think it was called like Blown or On Your Knees. It was basically all about she does like a full like hour and a half about giving blowjobs, and it was so funny, and like, and Judd's there with Maude, and so half of my attention is on this brilliant show and half of it is like Judd's sitting right next to Maude through this whole play.
I know.
Wonder what that's like.
Yes. As
he did say later, he was like, okay, that was that, you know, we go a lot of places together, but that was a little awkward.
Yeah. Even for them. I know. Yeah. Well, I remember you telling me like a million years ago about a play you were doing. Maybe it was Beirut. Maybe it wasn't. I don't remember, but a play that your dad was like, who was the most, I mean, your family is
phenomenally supportive and has always been, but your dad was like, I'm out. Like, maybe there was nudity. I don't remember which play it was. And I'm like, right. It gets so blurred and complicated. And then when you're working together, I mean, there are things I don't even want my dad to see just because it would be too awkward, let alone him directing it. Like, it's a whole new language that just wasn't part of my personal story. But I admire that. And she's really talented, and it's kind of exciting to watch her. So there's two other things that I got to see you do recently in a career that has had such extraordinary longevity. And the way Marissa and I know each other is we both started out in a theater company called Naked Angels in New York, which was very much a playground for learning all the things that we're still doing in certain ways. But this year, I got to see you do this part in this incredible movie, this year meaning last night. And then I got to see you on Broadway, just blow my mind in The Rose Tattoo. And then I got to see you play Edith Bunker in All in the Family. And if we just were to take these three roles and not even mention the other 100 film, television, and theater roles that you've done, like, what an incredible assortment of kinds of writing that you were drawn to for so many different reasons. So I don't know if we could kind of talk a little bit about All in the Family. I know that wasn't yesterday, and I don't know if it's as fresh in your mind as it is for me, but can you talk about that experience? Because it was sort of mind-blowing how perfect it turned out for me as a viewer. I don't know what your experience of it was. I was not nervous to watch it. I was thoroughly relaxed, but I wondered what it was to do it.
Well, that's unusual that you weren't nervous, because I think a lot of people were like, oh God, are they going to ruin All in the Family? I mean, it was Norman's brainchild, you know, to bring it, and Jimmy Kimmel to make it happen. It was really, you know, just when I was like, you know what, my career's over, I'm packing it up. It's like, I'm getting into like a slow period, and it's just so hard for women, and it's been trying to be part of a system that isn't supportive, as we see all over the news now, and for artists, you know, and that incredibly articulate and pointed letter that the Black community put out just yesterday. So that was really phenomenal. And it just so what's the it's still a hierarchical, white, patriarchal kind of vision for everyone else. And you've got to kind of squeeze into these little boxes. So I was getting into a place of like, I've gotten to work, but the hustle is getting to me. And out of the blue, just when you think you're out, they bring you back in. And Norman called me directly. And
Did you know him?
I met him like years ago because of Naked Angels. Remember Maggie Lear was such a supporter?
Yes.
So I had, when I came out to LA, I was friendly with Maggie too. And also because Sue Leibman is her best friend. So, you know, that was it. That was decades ago. And he was so.
Yes. And Sue Leibman is an acting manager, just for people who. Shout out to Sue Leibman.
Huge theater supporter. And, yes. And it was started with Manhattan Class Company, and also Naked Angels was around a lot.
Yeah.
And continues to, you know, like, is an incredible artist's supporter. And anyway, I don't know how he got my number, but he's Norman Lear, so of course he got my number. So it was just a random number. I don't even know why I answered. I normally don't even answer my phone.
And yeah.
Norman. Hi, it's Norman. And he says, well, Remember 30 years ago when I said that I was gonna give you a ring? I'm giving it to you. I'm calling you now. And who could resist that? So, but it was, I love how you pointed out that the kinds of writing are so different. because that's what was so thrilling. So you have the sitcom format with a very broad comic rhythm, and then this improv, but kind of heartfelt, darker tone in Judd's movie, and then the high lyricism and melodrama, and also screwball in Rose Tattoo in Tennessee Williams' writing. It was really so satisfying to be able to do all that. Sorry, there's traffic.
Yeah. No, that's okay. So he's like, I'm doing this. I have this concept. Jimmy Kimmel and I are going to do this sort of series. It felt very Playhouse 90 in that way, in terms of how it was presented. Does he say, and Woody Harrelson and Ellie Kemp, like, does he kind of already set up for you what the whole cast is, or not yet?
No, I think that Woody was, I don't even remember if Woody had, but definitely no one else was cast, for sure.
Okay.
It could have been Woody at the time. Yeah. But it was just like a and also live. And I was like, yeah, I was saying yes to him on the phone right now, but I got to get out of this. I'm not doing this. And also,
this is a terrible idea.
Yeah. I was like, I'm not going. This is like, of course I'm talking to you and it sounds great. As soon as you hang up, it's like, that is terrifying. And no. And then, and also I was like, Edith, what? You
know, how did he even, it's crazy. That's not obvious casting. It turned out to be the most brilliant marriage, but it doesn't make sense on paper.
It was so much fun. I think that he thought of me really because as I was describing, I was kind of like taking this step back, at least inside. And I was at, in my interior life, and I went to eat at Chris Bianco's, pizza joint downtown with my brother and a couple other friends. And Jimmy was there that night. And I think, we just like said, we all were friends with Chris. So we said, so it was really food. Basically what I'm saying, it all had to do with pizza, food, and my brother, and really not much else that made that happen.
Like all good things.
Yeah.
Kind of perfect things, right? Like, like love and food and creativity and loyalty. Like those are beautiful.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
So how does one, I mean, here are things that were interesting to me. I know that show, right? I watched that show with my parents. I remember thinking like, I loved Sally Struthers' hair. Like the things I connected to were like teenage things. Like I wasn't living that life. I didn't quite understand the depth of the politics of that show. I found it really entertaining, and I knew that it was radical and really pushing the envelope in a very exciting way. I don't know how deeply I thought about it at the time, but I loved it. And I loved Edith Bunker reminded me of people that I knew. But I wonder what the expectation is when you guys are thinking about doing it. Is it like people will watch it who know it and will feel sentimental? Were there people who watched it who literally, because Marissa Tomei and Woody Harrelson are famous and we want to see what they're doing, did they have any idea what it was? You know what I mean? Like, it's so interesting to me. Yeah. Like, my kids would watch it because they love you, but they wouldn't know this was a show that already existed. Like, they wouldn't know anything about it.
Well, I think it became that, kind of what you said, like more of a family, like yet again, a family event, because now our generation was telling, hey, this is what this was about. Come, we can all watch it together. And there was a little bit of explaining the background and enjoying it together from different perspectives. I think that's what did wind up happening, as far as I could tell from the feedback I got.
Did you understand that, you know, you did the Rose Tattoo. You were brilliant. No one said, listen, I want you to play Anna Magnani. I'm Tripp Coleman. I'm a director. Will you do Anna Magnani in the Rose Tattoo? Right? Like, you're doing Marissa's interpretation of this classic role. Mm-hmm. I feel like there was a way in which there was a channeling of Jean Stapleton in what you did. but a very full Marissa at the same time. And I wonder how they talked to you about it, because there was a real tipping your hat to the original actors who portrayed these roles. It was not a departure.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you even start to think about that?
Well, I just, you know, it's infused in the, she's basically, Jean is a co-writer of that role. So
I didn't know that.
No, mean, I'm kind of saying euphemistic.
Like, right. Yes. Got it. Of course.
For so long.
Yes. She was channeling that character.
She was a Broadway star, because she was, and she would sing. So they were singing in, like when you're on a, you know, when you're on a show for a long time, people do start to pull things from your life or from your essence. So I think it was already imbued with her essence to, you know, such a degree. And, she, I mean, I did ask for her blessing and I kind of tried to commune with her, and, Norman was like, just look at this. The only, we really didn't get too much, because also everyone was, it hadn't been done in so long and we're doing it live, and it was kind of thrown together, believe it or not, the first one that was like, in a way. So it, he just said, just, you know, look at it as its own, as if someone just sent you this script. But of course there's that, but you also still know that this is the legacy. And so I just wanted to know more about the background of the character, and I could, and in the episodes, I avoided watching the episode that we did, but I did watch a lot of the first year of All in the Family. And what I was looking for was not to copy mannerisms or not to copy the voice, or in the episodes, they talk about, oh, well, when Archie was in the army for these years, and, oh, remember when I had that job, and then I left that job, and remember when my cousin came. So I got, like, I would just keep a list of all the background and you know, all the homework that we normally do to create a character, but it's already there. It's in the show. So I culled that together and worked from that place.
Well, did you, I know you don't like to watch yourself, but did you watch that? Have you seen what you did?
No, I didn't. I haven't watched it.
Oh my God, Marissa, you have to. There, you will be so happy.
I've been in a long time doing that. I'm like, I just want to do this. I'm like, but they don't do live shows anymore. To me, it would combine the thing, you know, get to do live theater essentially. In a short format. Once a week. And you pretty much know that's it. And you can go home.
Totally. I mean, it was like summer stock or something when you described, I mean, how fast it must have all gone. Well, so tell me about the rose tattoo. And as you look back on it, sort of, what's your favorite memory of doing that role on Broadway?
Well, I'm thinking about how all the women, and just that was so unusual, because it was like being in a musical, or just like a little taste of a musical. And so there are all these wonderful dancers and singers in the show. And that was really great to meet a whole nother, you know, kinds of artists that I'm not usually on the same stage with. It's like, you know, being with musicians. Yes, I'm musical and I'm around musicians, but I'm not on stage with them a lot. So this is like the same, it's the same kind of thing to and really, really incredible Broadway performers. So I think about them, I miss them. And I think about doing that, in the second act, really getting to fly in the date scenes with Eamon Elliott, and just being so silly and just being so tuned into each other. I mean, what a dance partner. Oh my God. Like, we were just so in sync. And that just very, very rarely happens. And it's just bliss, as you know, when that.
Did you know each other? Did you know him? Was this the first time you'd worked together? Did you know him even socially before this play?
Mm-mm, I didn't know him at all. And he came over from Scotland to do the show. So I didn't. No, I didn't. It was a leap on all of our parts.
And did you read together? Like, did he come in and you guys kind of work on it before he got the part? Were you a part of the casting process?
Trip did it and came back from overseas and said, I want you to meet a couple of these people. And yeah, we read, but I think Trip kind of had it in his mind and knew what he wanted to do.
Was that a part that you had seen when you were a younger actress? And was that something you always wanted to do? Or was that someone else's idea for you to do that play?
It was something I really explicitly did not want to do because I didn't want to. I'm always trying to get away from that, from anything that's could be a, well, not that that play is a stereotype, but for me, trying to like be challenged in terms of range. And I thought, well, I don't want to do another Italian thing, even though this was Italian. Real Italian, not American Italian, but yeah. So I hadn't, and I had seen it also years ago with Mercedes and Anthony, and but I don't really. I wanted to do it at a certain point. We read it aloud for Williamstown, and then I was like, oh. You have to, once you get into it, this is a whole nother kettle of fish. And it's just so heavy on the page. And then, and so vibrant and nuanced and speaks so specifically to what women feel inside. So once we read it out loud, I really wanted to do it. And then I had to fight really hard to, be allowed to do it because I wasn't the person who was chosen to who they wanted at first.
Oh, I didn't know. That is a little known fact I did not know.
Mm.
Well,
I fulfilled the little.
They were really glad.
Okay, good.
We're done. That's all we wanted. I want to go back to when you say sort of Italian. And when you say Italian, meaning Italian from Italy versus New York Italian, or specifically in your case, Brooklyn Italian, as a girl who grew up in Brooklyn, it is, you know, undeniable that all these years later, you sort of, when you talk about getting away from something, you know, you put a stamp and your stamp on something that became the bar. Like, if you want to be authentic and for people to believe in you, watch what Marissa Tomei did in My Cousin Vinny. Start from there. That is the blueprint. And don't even try if you can't even begin understanding what she did. And I want to, you know, first of all, I think I was living in your apartment in LA when you were shooting that movie. I was just talking to John Benjamin Hickey, and we were like, oh my God, that's when we were subletting Marissa's apartment. That's just so crazy to me to kind of think back to that. I can picture your leopard furniture in the living room, like crazy. So I'm glad I was able to help you pay the rent while you were shooting. Like, I want to start with that. You're welcome. But I want to like talk about this thing that just was so exciting for all of us because we knew you. Like, our friend just won an Oscar. Like, it was so crazy. And there's Frank Pugliese, you know, at the Oscars with you. And it felt like it could be happening in our backyard. Like, it was crazy. Yeah. So first of all, did you audition for My Cousin Vinny?
I did indeed. yes, that was an audition. Like, it was an on tape thing, and a different kind of on tape than the kids do now. And I think it was like VHS level on tape.
Yes.
Joe tells me that Joe Pesci tells me that he saw that tape and he's the one who picked it out, because obviously, like, you know, who was I? And he was like, I think this kid. And so I don't remember if I went in and read with him. I guess I did, but he's the one who I think I was in such a state of shock all constantly during those that period of years. I don't remember it all very well.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah.
But then, so Jonathan Lynn was the director, right? Am I remembering correctly? And so suddenly you are in this movie, and I guess I'm wondering the kind of comedic, I don't know, like, I don't know how to describe it, but like this idea of just going for it, like full out, like not holding back, but sort of inhabiting that character. Because anyone who knows you, yes, you grew up in Brooklyn, and yes, you know people like that, but that wasn't, you know, that's not how you walk through the world.
Thank you for saying that. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're elegant and, you know, educated and, as was she, but I guess the biggest difference is, even though you live in that, grew up there, you don't have that accent naturally when you dialogue with people.
Yeah. And Brooklyn now, everybody, you know, you live in Brooklyn. Everyone lives in Brooklyn now.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, I think at the time people didn't know how big Brooklyn is too. It's a giant, and there's lots of different pockets. And I didn't grow up in that neighborhood. I actually had moved into my grandma's, I stayed with my grandma for a little while in preparation for that movie, because she was closer to, you know, that vibe.
So did you do that, when you think back to that audition, and I'm sure it's hard to remember, do you think it was as full out as she became in the movie?
I really don't remember. I'm sure I worked on it with Kate McGregor Stewart, who's been my acting teacher for a long time, one of them, but the primary one. And I had started taking class with her in Hell's Kitchen in New York. And then I'm sure that we just worked on the scene, because I definitely worked on it with her, you know, once I got the job. And we worked on it together. So I'm sure that's what happened.
Was it a joyous experience or a really scary experience doing that movie?
It was kind of, I mean, I wasn't like really like a fully cooked human being, I think. I don't know. I just was like, trying, you know, going around. We had the theater company. I missed that terribly. I missed like the foundation. Those were really the most fun years for me, with the Naked Angels years. And I didn't really want, I was scared to do that movie. Like I had gotten this job because you just audition for everything, but I didn't really want to do that because I was scared of being pigeonholed. And in fact, that has been, it was a blessing to do it, but it has been something I've had to fight and, forever. So I at the same time, I had gotten like a small part in the Spike Lee movie, but when my agents, you know, and manager kind of talked me through it, and they, you know, they were like, you know, take this. So, but I was really scared. I didn't even know what on location was. I'd never been on anywhere. What does that even mean, to like pack up and live somewhere else to do a job? I hadn't really thought through any of that. And I hadn't been around cameras very much. I had done the sitcom and I'd done a lot of plays, but I hadn't been on, it was the second movie set that I had been on. So I didn't really know. And I'd have to ask Joe. He was just really, he protected me a lot and helped guide me a lot.
Right.
And tell me things about the camera and things like that. Yeah. So I was, yes, short answer, yes, terrified.
Yeah. And then everything changed, right? I mean, then you won an Academy Award for this part, and that was actually your first nomination. You were nominated three times. When you talk about sort of the way you chose things, I mean, when you think about The Wrestler, when you think about these other movies you've done in your career, like, it sounds like maybe you had to really fight for those opportunities or do smaller movies to be able to break the mold of My Cousin Vinny. But man, you've really done it. You've really done it. I mean, the kind of art that you've continued to make, you're returning to the theater constantly. I'm so happy that I get to tell you in person today how it's been really beautiful to watch your career and just to see you make these choices that are just deeply artistic with, you know, all sorts of successes or not for the actual project, but always with this integrity and depth and beauty. And, you know, you talked earlier about sort of getting permission or a blessing from Gene Stapleton. And I know, like, having known you for a long time and living in your apartment, there's like a very deeply cultivated spiritual side to you. And so it's sort of astonishing to me when you said, even when, you know, All in the Family came around, that Marissa Tomei, I think people will be astonished to know, was going, do I have to pack it in? Like, still, after all this time, that there's still that ride and uncertainty about what kind of opportunities will be there next. And I think people don't realize that that's a really ongoing journey if you want to do really good things that stretch you.
Yeah, I appreciate all of that so much. I'd be like, I'm going to call you next time I'm really down. Thank you for that.
You should. You should. Absolutely. I do want to, I know you moved this week and there's so much going on, and we sort of had a sidebar little known fact, but is there something that sort of comes to mind that isn't even necessarily work related about, you know, who originally was going to be in the Rose Tattoo, but something more meaningful to you that you'd want to share about yourself with people who don't get to know you intimately in real life?
That I harbor a desire to make some kind of show, or, well, maybe a podcast inspired by you, about female spirituality around the world.
Wow. I'll listen.
Okay.
Marissa Tomei, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. What a beautiful way to spend some time on a Wednesday, and I thank you.
Likewise, I thank you. Big hugs, big virtual hugs.
Clouds can make the wind blow, bugs can make the grass grow. So there you go. These are little known facts that now you know.
Little Known Facts is edited by Nicholas Klar and recorded in New York City.
Did you know a 2018 study showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual. When I was 4 months pregnant, I couldn't find a prenatal I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested for heavy metals, and recently earned the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. But don't just take my word for it. Get 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.